I see. Now you're upsetting me. You don't want to see me upset. Believe me.
Oh, you want to fuck with me? You think you know bad, huh? You're a fucking choir boy compared to me! A choir boy!
Everybody, and welcome to Frankenstein's Podcast, where it's all about the monster. We're a creature feature podcast about monsters and why we love them. I'm one of your hosts, Joe Praska, and with me as always is...
your other host, Khalid Hussain.
What's up, Khalid?
What's up, Joe?
Did you see my finger guns there?
I did see it. You're very animated today. I don't hate it.
Yeah, I just, yeah.
Good stuff.
I'm glad you don't hate it. How are you?
I'm great, man. I'm just going to go ahead and brag. I DJ'd my first wedding this weekend.
Yeah, I heard that. Super DJ Khalid now, right?
Yeah. Ironically, my DJ name is not DJ Khalid.
Yeah, I was going to say you shouldn't Google DJ Khalid to find you, huh?
You'd have to Google not DJ Khalid, which one of my friends pointed out is actually like terrible because... Google search engine doesn't really like work that way. So if you just try to search not DJ Khalid, you're just going to get DJ Khalid because they'll just like remove the not.
Or, wait, like, assume... is your name not DJ Khalid? Like that phrase?
Yeah, I'm not. It is. DJ... Yeah, because I'm not DJ Khalid.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to Google.
I've got sound effects and everything too. It's like, not DJ Khalid. We're okay. I wish my mustache connected to my beard.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was good.
It was amazing. We were out in Joshua Tree and it was just a lovely time. And I'm so thankful to the bride and groom for letting me do it. And yeah, man, just I don't know if you've ever seen that Jim Carrey movie, Yes Man, but
yes.
Yeah, that's the point. You say yes to things. So that's what I'm trying to do with my 30s, is I'm just saying yes to things even if they scare me.
Tell me, Khalid, which song hit the most?
Gotta say it was Chattahoochee.
Okay.
That one. And then surprisingly, it was that Nickelback song, You Remind Me, or This Is How You Remind Me.
Huh. Yeah, I kind of see that. Yeah, that's like a throwback song. That
when I tell you the Bridesmaids were like, It was like what Queen's like We Will Rock You does to like a locker room full of boys. Like they Whoa. Were like huffing and like flexing singing this song. It would have been scary if it wasn't so cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is something.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of Nickelback, Khalid, I feel like we should bring in our guest.
And yeah, we will just move past whatever the hell kind of transition that was.
I don't know why I thought of that, but just to kind of build off what I said last time we're here, we're kind of, it's a little mini kind of sort of pseudo series where we're bringing in some special guests of friends of the podcast, fans who've supported us in the show and in life, and just have a history with genre stories like ourselves. Our guest today is a special one who's been a fan since day one. He came up with the much-loved term Frankenstein term, if I say it correctly ever. This is our super fan, Ryan Mintz. Welcome.
Hey, everybody.
Hey.
What's up, man?
Long time, first time.
OG Frankenstein. Does it kill you every time he says Frankenstein?
It mostly kills me every time you guys don't mention that you have a subreddit.
What's true? You also created the subreddit. Is it up to date? Is the big question.
It has not been posted on in several years, but we have 7 members at the moment.
I wonder.
That's
I don't
enough
know who
for
they
a
are.
Quorum. I'm pretty sure you could have a quorum.
You could. Well, I know. You start updating it again. I bet those people have been wondering what's going on. They think we're off air.
Yeah, they stopped listening because they can't find it on Reddit.
That's true. I was wondering why every episode for the last like 2 years have been 7 less listens. So.
The quorum is out there just waiting for commands, marching orders.
That's totally it. That's totally it. All right, Ryan. Ryan Mintz. I'm used to calling you Mintz, so I'm going to say Ryan, and it's going to feel weird. I'm probably just going to say Mintz, everybody. Moving forward, I have a couple guest questions for you, and I know that you've prepared, correct?
I've been ready for, 4 years now? 3 years?
Yeah, yeah. All right, I'm ready. I don't know his answer, so I'm very excited for this. So, all of pop culture, movies, books, TV shows, what have you. What's your favorite monster? If it isn't the same, what's the scariest?
My favorite, because I only encounter it once a year and it makes me so happy every single time, is the Bumble from the Rudolph Red-Nosed Reindeer Christmas special.
Great choice.
I'm Googling this. What the hell are you talking about?
You don't know what this is? Oh, that's right.
The Bumble.
It's an abominable snowman that attacks Santa Claus's village in the, 1964 or whatever, claymation.
Yeah, but he's not evil. He's nice.
Well, he's evil until they take his teeth out.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
The morals in this I've seen
TV
it.
Show aren't great.
Okay.
It probably won't fill you with the same giddy joy as it does with me, since I've watched it with my mom every year for the last 34 years.
Hey, Mince, let's get one thing clear. You don't know what fills me with joy. It could very well be the Bumble.
I figured you were just already full of joy, so you couldn't be any more full.
I got space for filling.
Anyway, the Bumble isn't particularly scary. So the scariest monster is the unknowable. Physical monsters aren't that scary, but the unknowability of David Tennant and Jessica Jones, and the abilities to do whatever he wants, there's no way around it. You can't beat it. Well, I guess they can, because they did, but I've never wanted a fictional villain to be caught so badly as I did. When they almost caught him in the fifth episode of that show, the diner, I was cheering so hard for it and then so let down.
Yeah, that's a really good answer. David Tennant is just such a lovable guy, but played such a horrible villain in that. It's so such a great performance.
Well, they introduce him by making kids piss in a closet.
That's right. Yeah,
he's one of the few actors that to me like successfully plays a hero and a villain at equal temperaments. You know what I mean? You can cheer for him just as much as be I want you to die.
I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger can famously do that by playing the Terminator twice in a row.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Mr. Freeze.
Oh, chill.
Eyes to meet you.
Why don't we watch that movie instead?
Yeah. I guess that would work. That one would work.
All right, we'll pause the recording and go watch that instead.
Famously good movie, also. Famously good movie.
But what are we talking about, Khalid?
I have two more questions, Khalid.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry. That seemed like a really good transition point.
It did, but it wasn't.
All right. Well, this is why you do the transitions.
Thanks, Khalid. Next question for you, Mintz, is what do you consider yourself most geeky about? What's on your geek card?
It's just general geekdom. I don't follow anything super specifically except for Star Trek, where I've seen every single piece of media that Star Trek has produced besides some of Prodigy. So that probably counts as my geekiest thing. The second thing I follow most closely is baseball, which is, you can geek out about baseball, but it's not the traditional thing. Season started already, so everybody get together and watch some American pastime.
Aren't you able to, is this you or am I thinking of somebody else who's able to if I give you a number, you can tell whose number that is in baseball?
Most numbers.
Is that in any baseball? I could just be 28.
28. Prince Fielder.
49.
It's a pretty big number. That's some relief pitcher that I don't know.
Okay. 38.
Still big numbers. You got to stick below 20 for baseball player. 20 or
two.
Bill Hall.
Okay.
Mother's Day Brewer hero, Bill Hall.
The cool thing about this is that I'm not gonna double check.
Yeah, I don't know if it's right.
I don't even know if Bill Hall's a real athlete.
You weren't a big fan of the late 1990s Brewers? I guess that was early 2000s.
I had something going on.
All right, Mintz. So I'm curious. This is not one of my traditional questions, but I was just wondering, since you're a fan of genre stuff like us, you like Star Trek. What's your background growing up with like sci-fi, horror, fantasy genre stuff. Like, were you a big fan of that stuff as a kid? Did you come to it late in the game? Like, what's your history there?
Well, I mean, my brother and I watched Ghostbusters like once a week when we were kids, you know, probably more often that because we were kids.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was the launching point, I guess. But then for, I don't know, descending into nerddom, I think it was just a gradual increase. And yeah, I don't know. I got really into Doctor Who at one point, like as a young adult. And I don't know.
Don't sell yourself like, short. You met one of the doctors.
Oh, yeah. He was a creep. Don't talk to whichever doctor I met.
Why was he a creep?
He was like a 70-year-old man, and there was a teenager wearing a TARDIS dress, and he walks up to her and goes, "Oh, I must get into that."
Okay. Huh. Yeah.
Sylvester McCoy.
Oh my God. Jesus.
Is that the scarf one?
No.
Okay.
That's Tom Baker.
Okay. He's still pure.
Sylvester McCoy is going to be contacting you guys for this slander, but you know.
All right. Well, Sylvester.
Bring it. No such thing as bad press.
I mean, he's going to have to get in line behind Abbott and Costello's lawyers for your little not DJ Khaled bet after you ripped off Who's on First. But
well, you know we got a lot of people after us here.
I am famously anti Abbott and Costello, so I won't even watch Abbott Elementary because of the name.
It's patently false.
It's a delightful show.
Yeah. Jim Abbott was a baseball player who only had one arm.
Again, I'm not gonna fact check you. One-armed baseball player, sure, that's a thing.
Well, Khalid, I've got a question for you now.
What's up, Joe?
What breakfast item does the devil prefer the most?
Deviled eggs?
Yes. Got another question for you.
Who eats deviled eggs for breakfast?
The devil. Got another question for you, Khalid.
Sure.
What is the devil's favorite spice?
The devil's favorite spice?
Yeah.
Damn, what is it? What is it? Something with sin? I don't know. Cinnamon.
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 Yeah.
You got it. Wow. Damn. And that's a segue, Khalid.
Joe, can I do one?
Yeah, do one.
Hey, Khalid, if the devil wants to call you, what does he use?
Oh, the hell phone.
You did it. Joe, that's three for three.
I hate what you've done to me, Joe.
So deep into this.
I don't want to be as good at this as I am. I hate it. Anyways, Joe, did you say something? Did you transition to me? I can't even remember. I just feel like a loser.
I said, and that's a segue, Khalid. What are we talking about?
Thanks for asking, Joe. Today we're going to talk about the 1999 horror film? I don't know what genre this is. End of Days, directed by Peter Hyams. And I've got a synopsis from our homeboy Google that goes a little something like this. A private security guard finds himself caught up in an apocalyptic conflict. The devil's only chance of getting out of his eternal prison is to mate with a chosen girl in the last hour of the millennium. And the guard finds himself having to protect the woman from an enemy in whom he does not even believe.
What a monster.
That creature's of the abstract, they live off potential energy.
It's alive!
Boom. All right. That's a synopsis for us. Thanks, Khalid. Just a little bit of background before we get into this. You mentioned this is directed by Peter Hyams, who was recommended to the project by one James Cameron, actually. And however, though, he came in late in the game and he replaced a man named Marcus Nispel, who I don't know, presumably direct other things, but this guy, Nispel, quit the project before the start of shooting after somebody at the studio leaked a 64-page manifesto, which included demands such as his personal assistant being an attractive woman, that the producer was not to speak to him more than three times a day, and that all the cast and the crew were to be given a pertinent procedures list detailing when and how they were allowed to talk to him that he sent them. So this was leaked, and this director kind of quit, and the rumor was that he quit in shame because of it, but apparently he has said that it's not because it was shame, it's because he felt he was unable to trust the studio after the document was leaked.
I mean, bullet dodged, right?
Yep.
I think so. I don't care if the movie would have been good in his hands. That is already the reddest of flags.
Right? Yeah. I mean, good on the guy who leaked it.
Yeah. That, honestly, though, you know how awful you got to be for me to be like, good on that exec. Good on that studio exec.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that was a little background there. That's how we got to Peter Hyams. Also, Sam Raimi and Guillermo del Toro were offered to direct, but both turned it down.
That would have been more interesting for sure. I think Sam Raimi would have been the move. Guillermo del Toro would have done something with this, but like it would have probably just looked better than it actually was.
Probably true.
Yeah. Anyways, how about some Frankenstein's podcast trivia? Apparently nobody wanted to do this movie.
So we asked you, Ryan Mintz, here to come on the podcast for this little mini friend series. And you did not recommend this movie to us?
Well, I didn't know about this movie until you told me to watch it, Joe. I didn't even know what this movie was called last week after we've been talking about it for 6 months.
I thought you recommended this movie.
No. You just wanted to watch it because you love crappy B movies.
I do. That's true. That's true. I think I'm circling back to the conversation, and I think what happened might have been we were talking about Arnie somehow, because sometimes that's what we do. And I think we were talking about Arnie and being in monster movies. I already done Predator, and I was like, "Hey, have you ever watched End of Days?" And you're like, "No," or I thought you said yes. But and I said, you should do that one on the podcast. So yeah, maybe I suggested it now that I'm circling back.
That's so funny. Listeners, it was a really funny conversation right before we recorded where Joe has for weeks been like, yeah, Mintz picked End of Days. And I was like, oh, cool. Mintz got like very specific like taste. And then I finally get to talk to him right before we record. I'm like, yeah, why'd you pick this movie? It's interesting. And he goes, I didn't pick this movie. Joe made me do it. And Joe just looks at him like, what the hell are you talking about? It was a beautiful moment. And I knew in that second that we had to stop talking and bring it to the pod.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's how we got here, everybody.
Joe has inflicted this upon everybody.
I guess. Yeah. I guess.
That is a Frankenstein's podcast first.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. It's important. A Franken first. I have said that before. Franken first. Yeah.
So you Franken first isn't a Franken first.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a Franken first for the phrase Franken first.
But it is a Franken first in and of itself.
Yeah.
This episode's getting deep with lore and mythology.
Yeah. We're getting super meta.
Anyway, let's get into some thoughts here. What did we think of the movie End of Days? Mintz, why don't we start with you since you're the guest?
And you supposedly picked it.
Supposedly. Oh,
yeah. I mean, since I picked this movie, I have to love it, right?
Yeah.
Up until Joe said that thing before about the director, I assumed that this was the worst possible director they could have for this movie. Like, they put Arnold Schwarzenegger in a... He's not good in a conflicted character. Like, you want Arnold Schwarzenegger being, like, you know, beefy and cool and unilaterally, like, decided to destroy whoever the bad guy is. You don't need him, like, trying to make moral decisions and trying to act that. You can't do that. Just show us his biceps. The action scenes were all terrible, except for the train crash. The train crash was cool. Mm. Like, the helicopter scene when Arnie is, like, chasing the priest guy on the roof, but like getting towed by a helicopter at the same time. Somehow that's simultaneously too cartoonish and not campy enough. Like, I don't know how you could thread that needle, but it doesn't use Arnold Schwarzenegger right. Everything in this movie, like, they somehow picked the most generic man in the world to be the bad guy.
Khalid disagrees.
We won't answer Gabriel Byrne slander.
I don't know who that is. And after watching this movie, I still don't know who that is.
Did you ever see Hereditary?
No.
Oh, that's a good one. He's in that.
Yeah, you asked me on a podcast to talk about movies when I watch four movies a year. And two of them are Ghostbusters.
Wait, like just Ghostbusters one twice? Or like...
Are there any other Ghostbusters, Khalid?
You know, now that I think about it, it's a very underused IP.
Yeah, the horror pieces were neat. Like, that guy broke apart, and when they, like, stapled the guy to the ceiling, that was pretty cool. But, yeah, that was about it.
All right, all right.
That's Khalid, the only two good things I have to say about this movie.
The horror pieces. I yeah. see. Okay. Khalid, what were your thoughts?
Man, this movie was nuts. Yeah, I personally, I agree with you about Schwarzenegger. I clicked about 15 minutes into it that, like, they must have really wanted Bruce Willis for the role, because, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger makes, like, no sense. This is just John McClane Constantine. Like it's the slightest of alterations to the Die Hard character. And the thing that makes Bruce Willis work and conversely doesn't make Schwarzenegger or even Stallone work is that, like, you gotta have somebody who convincingly physically looks like kind of a sad sack who's given up. Like, Arnold Schwarzenegger does not look like he gave up. Like, he looks like his wife and daughter got murdered, and then he immediately started doing 3-a-days at Planet Fitness. Like, even as, like it's like that thing where, like, you know how, like, The Rock has, like, a stipulation in his contract that, like, he can't lose fights? Like, I feel like Schwarzenegger had that where he's like, I can't not look like a badass with everything I do. So it's like, you're trying to reconcile this, like, idea of, like, oh yeah, he's like this, like, drunk who's given up on his job, but he can also, like, chase down, like, gunmen with, like, a fucking helicopter tethered to his back, and he's just got, like, an arsenal at all times because he's still, like, commando level prepared, and he works for, like, a nonsensically, like, well-funded, like, basically super spy agency. Like, he worked for, like, BlackRock in the 90s. It's insane. Like, the resources they have for the 90s, you could just track a car by the license plate in the 90s. Like, where exactly where it is, it's nuts. And yeah, it's just that thing of, like, Bruce Willis works as John McClane because he is believable as a guy with, like, limited resources and kind of, like, yeah, you go, like, yeah, he probably gave up a while ago. Like, he looks like he gave up. There's no give in a Schwarzenegger character. It's just a, like, physically imposing man with a bewildering accent. Like, that's the Schwarzenegger.
No, you can't make him be subtle in any way.
Yeah. Like, yeah. My family. Like, what? Yeah. No.
The point of Terminator is we get to see everybody's biceps as they handshake. Yeah. Like,
so you know, that
they're not, like, sitting there, like, talking about their conflicted emotions about killing a predator.
Exactly. So, like, that's the first thing that sucks. But then I really disagree with you. Gabriel Byrne actually, like, saved the movie for me as the villain because, like, he understood the assignment. Like, he was the right villain for this. And I think that he only suffered because he wasn't opposite Bruce Willis. You know what I mean? Like, somebody who could actually, like, make the funny jokes and, like, believably get his ass kicked time to time by Gabriel Byrne. It every scene where Schwarzenegger's getting his ass kicked, it looks, like, so fake, including the ones where, like, the old lady and stuff like that.
She shoves him into the wall.
Like, even, like, stage combat looked like it kind of hurt her. But yeah, like, it's a lot of thoughts, but, like, basically the story is, we'll get into it, like, just a fucking mess. It's just a casserole of ideas. Direction-wise, honestly, I'm willing to give points back to this movie now that I know he was a last-minute, like, tag-in situation. But yeah, I didn't hate my time watching the movie, but it's definitely something that, like, I wouldn't, like, run out being like, you got to see this movie. It's not like it's so nuts you have to watch it. It's about as nuts as a Y2K devil movie can be. But yeah, those are my first takes. Joe, what did you think?
Well, Khalid and Mintz, let me tell you a little story. So there was a time in 1999 when I was between houses. We lived in a small RV for a little while, and there was a little area where we could go get some videos, and there was a small shelf of videos, and one of the videos on that shelf was End of Days. So I watched a lot of End of Days in that summer. So there's a little nostalgia I have for this movie.
Wow. So it's got like a special place in your heart.
It's got a little special place in my heart. That being said, I am on a different page than I think both of you guys. I think this is not a very good movie. I'm with you on that one. I think it's kind of written poorly. I think that you're absolutely right that it's not written for Arnold Schwarzenegger in many ways. He's not really great at that conflicted element. That being said, I think Arnold Schwarzenegger's casting, for me, made this movie fun instead of just a drag. Like, his line reads are so funny. And I was just grinning. Like, I'm going to get to it in a little bit, but I pulled a bunch of quotes of things that he said that just made me laugh. Like, I wanted more Arnie one-liners in it, honestly. Like, he has some great ones in his catalog. I wanted more in this of him just, like, quipping at the devil. Like, that's what I want to see more of.
That was part of the problem with it. Like, they didn't let Arnie be Arnie. I think he only says, like, one, like, cool, memorable thing about
he has a few.
How you're a choir boy compared to me.
You're like, a choir boy. That was funny. Yeah. Calling the devil a choir boy. It was about the halfway point. Like, when he, like, gets the girl or brings the girl to the church and he's starting to figure out what's actually going on, when it started for me to, like, really pick up, like, when he was, like, confident at that point. Like, you know, I'll just get into it. Like, the line where he's, like, learning about, like, the whole devil's plot, and he's like, what is that, Eastern time or whatever? When they're like, that's a very funny line. Oh, the devil has to do it by midnight, Eastern time? What? It's a great question.
I mean, I appreciated that for, like, just, like, stealing the, like,
yeah,
be like, no, I'm trying to detract from this movie, and they put the words into my mouth, so I can't. That's not a quip that I can make about how bad the movie is.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, that stuff was fun. Otherwise, though, like, Gabriel, is it Brian? Is it Gabriel Byrne?
Byrne,
is that how you say his name? Mm-hmm. I thought he was fine. I didn't dislike him either. I thought he was smooth. There was a part, I think the part where they're in Arnold's apartment and he's trying to convince him to, like, join him. And he's like, I'm going to give you back your family and all that stuff. There was a line that he had that made me laugh quite a bit, though. Like, he had a really good, like, monologue kind of going on, talking about the new beginning, and, like, he had that line about, like,
typical villain shit, promise, yeah, hero, it was typical, the world,
yeah, he said, like, yeah. Oh, the, you know, God had a good PR campaign, like, that was kind of fun. But then he says, think of it as a new beginning, a change of management, and you'll be right there on the ground floor. It'll be so cool. It'll be so cool part. Like, I almost feel bad for Gabriel Byrne. Like, he's, like, trying to breeze past that bit, but has to say that line. It was so funny.
He sounds like someone, like, trying to, like, recruit you into, like, fucking Google or some shit. Like, early 2000s Google. Like, it'll be so cool, dude. Like, there's a ping pong table in our office. We're not, like, other jobs.
Yeah, that was so good. yeah. I also laughed, and this isn't necessarily particularly like a one-liner or a line or like a really funny line, but it's just a line read that Arnold had, like when he first realizes that CCH Pounder is a Satanist. Remember that? And she starts shooting at him.
Wait, and he says, when you say Satanist, you just mean someone possessed by Satan, not that she specifically believes in Satan, right?
I guess I don't know if he's possessed or I don't know. They never really explained it because the script doesn't try to. But like when he's like, Jesus, Marge, what the fuck?
Like, that was funny. That was
a fun line read.
That was hilarious. But again, like, these are all lines that, like, are only inherently funny because they're coming out of, like, his mouth. Like,
yes, Arnold's mouth. That's why I had a fun time.
But, like, you can see how, like, when the guy, whoever was writing this, like, clearly just watched Die Hard. Like,
true.
It's all shit that, like, well,
actually,
Willis, like, probably actually had said.
The real trivia piece is actually, it was, they wrote it for Tom Cruise.
That would have been weird too.
I think that would have been boring.
That would have been really boring.
Yeah. I think Arnold's fun. Would have made it work. You're right.
Yeah, because like Tom Cruise wasn't even in his like Mission Impossible, but like make it insane phase yet. He was still doing Mission Impossible straight, like American James Bond.
Yeah, pretty much.
So that would have been dull as hell.
Yeah.
How often does Arnie run in this movie? Because Tom Cruise runs all the time.
That's true.
I mean, he chases a man off a roof.
Yeah, I can see Tom Cruise dragging a helicopter across a roof.
He would have insisted that it was all done like in camera, like no effects, nothing.
That's true. Yeah, it is. So this movie is just like a weird, like, It's a weird intersection of that like religious horror thriller that was kind of really big at the time, because we had like Stigmata and like another one that came out in 1999. Actually, Gabriel Byrne's in Stigmata too as a priest, but like these like religious horror thrillers. But like this is the only one that also tried to be like an action movie. Like there was like a suiting up weapon montage. There was a helicopter chase scene. There was like fight scenes and explosions. It's just a weird intersection of genres that obviously didn't work, but I just like, it's kind of an interesting thing to look at. I think
I just like that it was a Y2K movie. I got really excited when I realized that's what they meant by End of Days. And also, yeah, like capitalizing on Y2K mania in the most like, when they explain why it's a Y2K thing, like I feel like I got dumber. I feel like I like lost like brain matter to that explanation, if I'm being honest. Just to recap, 666, which is the mark of the beast, is actually wrong. It's just reversed and upside down.
Because that's what happens in dreams, Khalid.
Because that's what happens in dreams from hell, Ryan. That's what happens for hell dreams, I guess. It's like Australian toilets. Everything's backwards. And then you just add a one to it, and that's why it's 1999. And also it's at the end of 1999, not like when like the clock strikes and it's 1999. When 1999 ends, that's why it's the mark of the beast that does it. It makes no fucking sense. Like, at all. It is the most, like, it's the halfest of asses, to be honest. Like, explanations. I've never seen anybody just, like I swear, like, there's probably a frame of, like, the screenwriter just doing this. Just doing this when they're explaining it. Like, if you pause it just in time, you see him just, like, waving his hand, like, eh.
Yeah, that's good podcasting. Show us what the director was doing.
Exactly. He's just, you know, you get it with my intonations. He's just like, eh.
Yeah. And Khalid's waving his hand.
That
repeatedly.
When he makes that noise, it sounds much more like the jerk-off motion.
Honestly, it works. Also works. Like, that's why I didn't bother explaining it. Whatever you thought I was doing, that's what the writer was doing.
Did you guys ever see that Jim Carrey movie, The Number 23? It made me think of that one where like he just like makes everything into the number 23 and goes, you know, like just kind of goes insane and like realizes the thing. He decides that number 23 is evil and is in everything. That's what it was like, where he just like makes these really strong like leaps to try to make the number 23 work and stuff.
Did you ever see that one where Jim Carrey says yes to everything?
I did. Yes.
That yes, movie's Khalid. Actually about Khalid.
It is.
Yeah, yeah.
We learned that.
It was about me in my 30s.
Love that. Love that for you.
Yeah, yeah. Ironically, the number 23 will be about me in my 50s. I'm just going to be like, no sleep, just keep telling you about numbers I see everywhere.
You know, I don't feel like that's that far off.
Number 23 is Ricky Weeks, by the way.
It's what? Oh.
Circle back.
Callback? Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say.
You said it like a British person would or something. Like how they say like how they say car park instead of garage. Like, oh, good circle back, my boy.
Got to circle back to the car park.
Love it.
I'm perfecting my accent work with reading bedtime stories to the kids. It's getting good.
I mean, that's certainly one opinion.
All right. So last thing I wanted to touch on before we get to the monsters a little bit, or the monster of it, which I'm actually really excited about the monster piece of this. I got a lot of interesting trivia, but I guess this kind of ties in the monster. Let's just monster anyway. This ties in with the monster anyway. You guys, any other thoughts before we monster it up?
I was just about to ask that. Yeah. Like, I mean, I could just dunk on the movie a million times, but I will say Robin Tunney, is that her name?
Yeah.
She was pretty good for in like what is a very weird and like hard to direct role or perform role. Because like she has to simultaneously be like scared, but like kind of want to bang.
Yeah.
And it's Gabriel Byrne, you know. So like there's a lot there. And then yeah, again, one last time, Gabriel Byrne's performance actually rules. Like the first scene, it's messed up, obviously. I'm not even saying it's good or anything, but like the fact that like the first thing he does, like no words, he gets possessed by the devil, wordlessly comes out, like gropes and makes out with a woman. Like it's definitely starts non-consensual, but I think it ends consensually. Like this is the idea, is like she's into it, or hypnotized at least. And then like he like shuts the guy up with a look, and then he walks out of the restaurant, and then the restaurant explodes. Like just that, like whichever draft of the script that came from, like I'm so glad it made it all the way to the fucking end, because like just great escalation of like introducing a guy and letting us know what he's about.
Yeah, great. Like yeah. when we get to the monster, like yeah, he's horrifying, like the things that he can do. But before we get to the monster, we need to mm-hmm. talk about the names of these characters.
Oh
yes! Oh my great god! Point. Yes.
Because the monster is just called the man, which is
that's where they started like just going, we should probably reel it in.
Because Arnie's name is Jericho Kane, which is great name. Yep. And then his buddy is Bobby Chicago.
There you go.
Like the writers weren't even trying, or they were trying too hard. One of the two.
Bobby I hear Chicago. The name Bobby Chicago, and I immediately think that man has a lot of debt.
Like, either that, or he's a bookie and he's breaking somebody's thumbs, right?
No, even as a bookie, like he owes other people a lot of money. Like you are only like the name Bobby Chicago is like James Bond. It's like it's actually a designation that goes from like one debt holder to the next every time there's new debt. It's the Santa Claus of names. Also,
when you say the Santa Claus, you mean the Tim Allen master.
Exactly,
right?
Santa Claus rules. Yeah. One deadbeat takes it on when the last deadbeat dies. Also, Thomas Aquinas is like it's like an actual like biblical.
That's a real.
Person, right?
That's a real
a medieval monk, I think.
Yeah. Saint Thomas Aquinas. Yeah.
So is the idea that that's the Thomas Aquinas?
No, I think they
he's been dead for like 500 years.
I think they're just like, that's a cool religious name. Let's use it.
So he just happened to have that name?
I don't know. Maybe he changed it.
That's also crazy. I don't know if it's crazy, but that's
crazy. The Pope gets to change his name, so maybe that guy gets to change his name.
Fair point.
Actually, that makes more sense. He's kind of he's a nutter. Also, I thought his plan was definitely like the coolest plan in the whole thing. Like everybody else had like,
to shoot the devil?
Thomas Aquinas, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like shoot him, like I mean, honestly, like of all the plans and everything that happens after that where it gets like really convoluted, like that guy had it right. Like just
I fully disagree.
One man off, like he didn't know that the guy was gonna hire the world's greatest like drunk bodyguard.
Arnie shoots him later and it doesn't do anything. Why does the man even need a bodyguard?
Well, that's what's confusing to me. He didn't need a bodyguard. But my thinking is like maybe he was still like shootable at that point. I don't know. You know, like this guy knew more than I did at that point in the movie.
He cut out his tongue.
Yeah, you'd probably find the answers if you cut out your tongue. We'll wait.
And then just because CCH Pounder will probably not come up in a lot of other stuff that we talk about. Do either of you watch Always Sunny? No, probably not.
Not so much. Sorry.
There's a guy on there who plays Dennis Reynolds. He does a really funny CCH Pounder like impression. It's the most random thing ever. But she was like a lead character in this TV show called The Shield, right?
Yeah.
And like he watched it all the time, and so like he figured out that he could sound exactly like her. So I'll send you the clip. But like basically, he just like gets like really into character, and then he just goes, "God damn it, Dutch! How many more errands you got us running for the DA?" And he does it in like such a pitch perfect. Like when you watch the clip of her saying it and him saying it, it is uncanny. And it's like such a hyper specific thing that like I would be remiss not to bring up.
I liked your impression.
Thank you. That was good.
Mean,
I gotta give credit to Glenn Howerton because like it's one of those things where like you know like when you hear an impression of somebody, it kind of cracks the code for you. Like the first person to do a good Obama, and suddenly everybody can do an Obama. You know, mm-hmm. So you know, social, Malia.
Okay.
But is she yelling at Dutch because that's a character in The Shield, or is she yelling at Dutch because that's Arnie in...
No. It's a character in The Shield. And
hashtag
it's
connected.
Yeah. It's all connected. I see what you did there.
Okay.
Circle back. Anyways, that's all of my movie trivia.
That was good. I'm glad we stopped to talk about names, you guys.
Yeah, thank you, Mins. Already just adding to this discussion.
I'm a student of the podcast.
You are. That's
you've
true.
You learned well, Kopai.
All right. Shall we monster?
Let's monster.
All right. So the monster is, as Mins pointed out, the man, but also referred to by the VFX folks is the Harbinger of the End, or the Satan Beast, portrayed in human form by Gabriel Byrne. Just a little bit of background about the VFX. So there was a computer animation house, Rhythm and Hues, which created like 60 shots, digital effects, character stuff for it. But there was lots of practical work that went into this from Stan Winston Studios, Stan the Man. So Stan Winston Studios, there was a designer by the name of Mark Crash in quotes, a nickname, McCready. And Crash apparently spent months designing what we saw in the end as the Satan Beast, the monster piece of it, the kind of like demonic entity that Gabriel Byrne turns into. He was able to conceptualize, so Stan Winston says this, he says he was able to conceptualize the devil in a way that was both cinematic and demonic. We didn't want to play to some cliche image of Satan, red skin, horns, just wouldn't have worked, but the character had to conform to some of the iconic mythology. So at first he created this design that we see into like a 3 foot tall, like sculpted, like maquette statue, which served as kind of the base for the digital one we see. Then they actually created a suit, which was 7 feet tall with a 12 foot wingspan. The suit, it's another Stan Winston quote here. It says, our demon towered over Arnold. It was really quite astounding to see this imposing visual of an actual demon interacting with him. 6 to 9 puppeteers were outside the beast to control various functions with, John Rosengrant, who was a sculptor, inside the suit to provide focus and direction for the creature performance. So essentially the suit featured a camera inside, which he could see inside to kind of like allow him to have a better sense of his surroundings while inside the creature. So they spent a crap ton of work creating this like monster design. And there was actually a lot of scenes involving the suit, the practical suit, that were ultimately cut from the final picture. There was meant to be like a dialogue between Arnold and the creature. But they end up cutting that and just moving towards him, the creature throwing Arnold against the wall. They also pretty much exclusively used the physical suit. However, after a test screening, the director decided to increase Satan's size to massive proportions and instead opted to use mostly the digital rendering instead of the physical suit. So much of the images we see in the final scenes are the digital versions, and the practical teams at Stan Winston Studios were actually pretty bummed about that because of how hard they worked on that suit. I think the actual suit appears in like technically 2 shots or 2 frames. So not a whole lot. It's there a little bit, but they worked real hard on that suit and made a really cool design that ultimately wasn't there much. So with all that being said, what'd you guys think of the beast design we saw at the end?
They probably should have just gone for like the classic devil look, because like the devil that we got was kind of just meh to look at. Very, very forgettable. He's like brownish. Also, I don't know. I mean, like presumably it was just shot in such a way that like the Stan Winston created one just looked really fake, and that's why they had to go with
probably
it.
Yeah,
but like, yeah, now that you say it, like it does feel like a last minute thing to like make it all VFX or mostly VFX.
And I thought the CGI was pretty good for 99 though, like it looked good.
Yeah, but like compared to like when like the one guy who's possessed on the subway like shatters, like that looked
yeah
good. For 99.
That was pretty cool. That was a cool
thing. This was like Scorpion King level graphics where it's like, this is unfortunate.
Yeah.
I agree. Like, I mean, I watched this movie yesterday to come talk about it on the Monster Movie Podcast, and I just had to look it up again to like what this monster looked like. So
I did spend like a good 75 to 85% of the movie going, wait, how is this a monster movie?
I mean, to me, the monster of it all is like what the devil is capable of. Like, he's not a physical monster. You know, the same with David Tennant and Jessica Jones.
Totally.
That, that character probably has a name. I just don't know what it is.
Purple Man?
Yeah, Purple Man.
But like, the monster can blow up restaurants like willy nilly. He can pee gasoline?
That's so funny. Just making it up every page of the script. Like, I feel like somebody new just like came up with a devil power.
Yeah, he can bestow people with super strength so that grandma can push Arnie against the wall through a piano. He punched a hole in that guy's head. That was pretty cool.
That was cool. I like that.
He also seemingly has like unlimited like respawns for his minions. Like, he should never be out of people.
Yeah.
He brought two people back from the dead that we know of.
Yeah, good point. No, I think you're right, Mintz. I think the like the monster of it is just like, yeah, what he's capable of. I think like the beast part. I mean, I spent a lot of time looking at like the behind the scenes like sculpting models, so I feel like I remember it now more than you guys. But like, the model of it is really cool, and like the suit that they created was cool. And I think the one shot you see it. I think this was the practical. Is there's a scene where you see like the wings spread out, and you see it's just a silhouette of Arnold, like small, tiny in front of it. And like the kind of like orange glow from the church is kind of coming through the wing, like the kind of membraney wings to reflect onto Arnold and make him more of a silhouette. Like, that's a really cool like frame by itself. And I believe that that's the practical thing there. And I think that was probably one of the best like memorable moments if you freeze frame that. But there's like a couple like close-ups of the face.
Just the one. That 1/24th of a second.
Yeah. Well, like, I'm like, I Googled it and I found the picture, so I'm looking at it. It's cool. But like, I think like when I'm like, you're right, kind of like looking at the parts where like, I think they use the CGI rendering, like it kind of looks a little more silly. It looks more like something like from like a fantasy movie almost.
There's just like not much definition to it. It feels like N64 graphics. Just very...
I would have rather had, I would have rather had the practical one the whole time. Even if it would have looked fake, I would have rather had that.
It should have just had it look fake.
Does it, does it really even do anything memorable? Like, it's kind of
floats around.
It comes out for like 2 seconds, and then it just possesses Arnie, and then Arnie just like kebabs.
Yeah.
Him.
Well, like I said, they cut out all the stuff like it was going to do.
Khalid, I love that phrase.
It was just like, fuck it, send me to my wife and kid. Like, that is like such a funny like win for him. You just watch him like impaled by a sword, smiling at his like the ghost of his like wife and kid, which I guess were there like watching, or they came down when he died. Unclear. I don't care. But yeah, no, I don't know. The monster just didn't really do it for me.
Speaking of doing things for you, Khalid.
Nailed it.
Thank you. Let's just imagine a scenario where you're sitting in a restaurant, Khalid. You see Gabriel Byrne walking out of the bathroom.
Like,
he's coming towards you.
Going.
He's coming towards you. You could tell just in your heart of hearts that he wants to make out with you, possibly grope a little bit. What do you do? Do you fight? Do you flirt? With the knowledge that he could turn into a Satan beast. Fight or flirt? What is it? Fight? What is fight or flirt, Khalid?
The Satan beast thing isn't a deal breaker.
For those who don't know, Khalid.
Okay. For those who don't know, Joe and Ryan, who definitely should know, fight or flirt is a segment that is pretty much exactly what it sounds like. We talk about whether or not I would fight or flirt with the monster from the movie we just discussed, or pop culture, whatever. For this one, I think I kind of telegraphed it already. Like, Gabriel Byrne's a super charming guy. Even as the like devil, like his like mean moments and stuff like that, he was still like really funny. He clearly like he, even with his personality, he's got like a lot of people that are like just like faithful to him, you know, like that says something about like he delivers, you know, which is like important to me in a partner is like follow through, which like, you know, like they, you don't get people to commit to like raising a baby from like literal birth to be your like one night stand without like without some cred, you know, like some joie de vivre, you know. So yeah, who am I? Like, and again, like this character specifically is like Dracula tier, like seducing anybody he wants to, you know. So it's like, who am I to sit here and go, oh, I would just fight him? Like, it took Arnold Schwarzenegger to like resist this man's like temptations. Everybody else like went with him. So I gotta flirt, you know what I mean? Like, if that's already like an option on the table and he's that charming and like hypnotizing, I'm probably gonna flirt all the way.
Yeah, you're kind of like Bobby Chicago, right? You don't know what you agree to when you're on fire.
I wouldn't even have to be on fire, honestly.
His heart is on fire for...
Yeah. Also, yeah. I don't think Bobby Chicago would have had to have been on fire. He could have just been like, hey, I'll clear your gambling debts.
It probably didn't take a lot of
convincing. Like, oh, thank God. Ever since I started letting people call me Bobby Chicago, it's been downhill. I can't stay away from a racetrack to save my life. anyways, that's enough on the roast of Bobby Chicago. What about you, Joe? Would you fight or flirt?
Would I fight or would I flirt? Well, what am I, do I have access to the arsenal?
Yeah, that didn't do Arnold much good. He literally had to just like kill himself at the end. That was the way he won.
Yeah, I was going to say it doesn't matter, actually. I don't know why I didn't ask, but...
So
this is a hard one. I don't know. I don't know. Like your comparison of him like being like a Dracula-esque was interesting. And I thought that too. Like he's very, very much so going for like a Dracula kind of Satan portrayal, which was interesting. But like, I don't know. There was like a part of me that when I was watching it that I've watched like different, we've all watched many different versions of like Satan in movies. Right. And like, different portrayals give us different depictions. And like, one of the things that I've sometimes been interested in the Satan portrayal is like the fallen angel trope, where he's not necessarily evil. He's just kind of doing a task that he has to do. And I've always kind of been more interested in that portrayal of Satan, where it's like this like previously good angel that had a difference of opinion in what like the doctrine of heaven, and is just kind of like stuck doing this thing, perhaps does shady things and wants to get out of it, but like there's this like other element. But this one was just like a pure evil interpretation of Satan, which is fine for the movie, and that's what the movie's doing. And I just feel like that interpretation is a little less appealing to me, and I just lose a little bit of interest if I'm looking for a long-term relationship, you know. So
you like,
I think,
a tortured bad boy.
Yeah, I like the tortured bad boy. So I think I'm a little bit out of this one. I think I just go with fight.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Wow. Usually you agree with me, so I'm like very like, I'm glad that you explained yourself.
Thanks. Yeah.
Mince, I gotta ask, fight or flirt?
Well, I'm on. I'm kind of in Joe's camp on this one, where like the interpretation of this villain is he's outright evil in a world where good and evil are absolute causes. You know,
yeah, that's true. If you're not,
I like a good person. Whatever this guy promises me, he's lying anyway and just wants to use me to get laid, I guess. That's what he's using literally everybody for. So I'm gonna fight him, but not one on one. I'm just gonna kill Christine, because then he loses and I win. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Like, saving the world, trolley problem, you know.
They don't do enough work explaining why Jericho doesn't just kill Christine, because like, what the, like, he literally starts the movie going like, dang, sucks that this is a Wall Street banker and not like a criminal. They pay better. Like, this man is like morally compromised. So it makes no sense that he gives a shit about Christine.
Yeah.
Whichever weird cult of Christians was trying to kill her, and like they could have, they just kept praying at her.
Thomas Aquinas tried. See? Oh, no, he wouldn't. He didn't try. He tried to kill Gabriel Byrne. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they kept doing
the ones with like the weird like heart pendants.
That's right.
Really need something if I know anything about Christianity.
Yeah.
I think it's made up. I don't know. I could be wrong. The heart pendant.
It's probably legit.
Yeah.
Don't look.
You historically know a lot about Christianity.
And baseball. I mean,
also, this movie is just, you know, so spot on with all of its research that, like, you know, you make a thing up.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of accurate dogma in there. Yeah.
Yeah. There's another movie we should have just watched instead, Dogma.
Great movie.
That was a great movie.
Didn't also came out around a similar time.
No, we didn't do that one.
We did not.
Yeah. It's a good one.
So anyway, yeah, that being said, so I guess we're flirt, fight, fight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Wow. I'm the unpopular opinion today.
You are. I mean, ultimately, Arnold said it. He's a choir boy.
Yeah. I sure do know how to pick him.
You do. Shall we move on to our final segment of the show?
Let's do it.
All right. Our last segment of Frankenstein's podcast is our What the Fandom segment, in which we go around and share one to two things that we are into at the moment that may or may not have anything to do with the movie in question, or may not have anything to do with Satan or Christianity. Probably won't. So, anyway, Khalid, what the fandom with you?
Thanks for asking, Joe. My What the Fandom this week is going to be the recent Oscar-winning foreign film Zone of Interest, directed by Jonathan Glazer. I finally got a chance to check it out in theaters, and it lives up to everything everybody is saying. I'm hesitant to say the hype based around like the subject matter. But yeah, it's a really, really affecting movie, and I think it does something that like is counterintuitive to storytelling and movies specifically, which is like you're kind of conditioned to want your villains to be like broad and like easy. You're Gabriel Byrnes, for lack of a better word, you know, like you want your bad people to just be like clearly bad, and you don't have to wonder about who the good guy is and who the bad guy is, and you don't have to wonder about what like that says about anything. It's just they're acting bad because they're bad. This movie really like bravely takes on like this idea of like, what if like historically some of the most evil people in like the world, Nazis, what if they are just like you and me? What if like they like some like don't want to have to work like away from their wife? And what if they like really do actually care about their kids, at least in what their fucked up way? But amidst all of that, they're still like helping facilitate like the one of the greatest atrocities of the 20th century, you know. And this movie does like such a great job of juxtaposing it, where it's like you're watching these like kind of mundane moments in a family happen literally next door to Auschwitz. Additionally, Jonathan Glazer had a moment in the news because of his acceptance speech at the Oscars, where he basically denounced Israel. And that's what made me want to watch it, was just it takes a lot of courage, especially as like somebody who is like now a really prominent like Jewish person in the entertainment industry who made a movie about the Holocaust to like stand against what's happening over in Palestine right now. And I really respected that, because I know it couldn't have been easy for him, but, and he's getting a lot of flack for it. But I think that this movie and everything that it says about it is very consistent with like the values that he displayed at the Oscars. So shout out to Jonathan Glazer. He is A-OK by me. And that movie rules. So it rules in that it's a well-made movie, not like hell yeah to the events of the movie. That is my What the Fandom for this week. Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer. And Joe, What the Fandom with you?
All right, thanks for asking, Khalid. All right, so my What the Fandom, I just recently, since he died, Akira Toriyama, I bought the first several volumes of Dragon Ball, the original manga that, you know, he wrote, that like the phenomenon was inspired by. And I've never actually engaged with that original story. I watched Dragon Ball Z younger as a kid, and I thought that was cool, but never really, you know, like knew much about it. So I thought it'd be finally, you know, just time to like dig into that and like read where it all came from. I will say there is just like an undeniable like charm to it. And like, he's a, you know, an interesting like artist and writer and comes up with some cool ideas. It is from like 1984 in Japan. So there's some really weird like sex stuff and like some weird tropes that are happening in there that are really hard to get past. Which I'm sure people who are fans who've read it already or watched the original like Dragon Ball anime are well aware of. I'm just kind of coming to it now though.
Reading about Bulma's fanny.
So yeah, there's some stuff there that's strange. I don't, it's certainly not for everybody. I think like, you know, if you're, you know, depending on where your sensibilities lie, that could be too much to get past. And I think that's totally fair and understandable. But that being said, like I'm reading it and I'm like, I'm into it. I'm enjoying it. I think like Toriyama is like a very influential like artist and like writer. And I think that's it's been kind of fun to just see like these early writings of his and like kind of what he did and what he came up with and like the world that he created that kind of, again, made this phenomenon. So I just wanted to give a shout out to Dragon Ball, just given especially that Akira Toriyama just recently passed away and has brought a lot of, you know, joy to a lot of people in that fandom. So that's my quick what the fandom this week is, just Dragon Ball. Anyway, how about you, Mintz? What the fandom with you?
Recently I've been playing this game on my phone called Music League, and it's kind of like either apples to apples for music or fantasy football for music. So we got 10 of us, and like, you know, once every week or so, it kind of fluctuates a little bit. We'll have a category. So like right now it's a song with a month in the name, or maybe it's a picture of a bottle of hot sauce, whatever. And when all 10 of us submit a song that, you know, we think fits the category, and then everybody votes on it and it keeps track of your score. So, you know, maybe twice a week I get published a new playlist curated by my 10 friends, and you know, you listen to music for a half hour and then you vote and then you move on. So it doesn't take up much time and it's just a way to share music with people.
Cool. I've heard Music League, did you say?
Yep.
I think I've heard of that. That sounds like fun though.
That's super cool.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thanks for sharing, Mintz, and thanks for joining us and finally coming on. I know you've been a longtime fan. You've been somebody who supported us since the very beginning. So I just wanted to thank you for all of that and all the time that you spent listening to us chat about monster stuff. It means a lot.
It really does, Mintz. You rule.
Yeah, I look forward to continuing this parasocial relationship with you, Khalid, where I feel like we're best friends and you have no idea that I'm listening. So.
Most of my closest friends are people I don't know. It works better that way.
Yeah. Is there anything you wanted to shout out, Mintz, before we close out?
There's another podcast I really love called Deep Space Love. Everybody should subscribe to that.
I would agree with that one. Yeah. We're working on some ideas for coming episodes for that. Good shout out.
Joe, I want you to know I tried to subscribe to your Patreon for Deep Space Love, but I couldn't find a stamp for my envelope, so I couldn't send you a dollar in the mail.
That's a fair point. There is analog Patreon. It's just to send us money for Deep Space Love. Speaking of Patreon, Khalid.
Speaking of Patreon, if you haven't already, consider becoming a patron and checking out our Franken bits. We have a couple episodes in there. We're about to bank a few more, and it's just a great way to listen to me and Joe conversate about things that go beyond the scope of creature effects, and really gives us an opportunity to just kind of stretch our conversational muscles, if you will. And so, yeah, if you have a dollar or three to spare monthly, please consider donating it to us. We will use that money for good things. I promise. I think you promise. I don't know what I did there. It was like a baby voice thing.
It was weird.
I didn't commit enough to it or anything. Anyways, yeah, please. I hope that didn't turn away any potential patrons. But yeah, there's cool stuff there. I promise.
Yeah, like an adult.
But yeah, thank you again, Mintz, for coming on. This really was like a long time coming, very overdue, but it was such a delightful conversation, even though none of us wanted to watch this movie except for Joe's inner child.
Joe, what parts of the movie were like nostalgic for you?
That's a really good question. I feel like I just, the ones that like really stick out to me, I remember are like the confrontation that he had with the bishops in the church. For some reason that sticks out. I don't know why. I feel like I remember the fight on the train being really exciting. Like you said, that was exciting. The train fight was cool.
Wait, so how young were you when you saw this?
If it was 99 then.
You saw that mother's daughter threesome when you were nine? Man. Well,
weirdly, I didn't remember that.
You watched Alien, so.
Yeah, I do not remember that. Is there anything
disturbing as that?
It's possible it was like 2000. It probably was a little bit after that, so probably 10.
Okay, then you're old enough.
Yeah, but like I totally didn't remember that scene. I was like watching that. I was like, what the fuck? But
also, did that actually happen or was that a dream for?
I was wondering that too.
I think it actually happened, but like we saw it as like she dreams of every time he bangs.
Yeah, that was a weird scene.
Yeah.
Anyway, that being said.
Thank you to everybody who listened at home. And thank you again to Mince. Until next time, creep it easy.